Okay, all right, so maybe we can get started. So I'm Ignacio Grossman here at Carnegie Mellon University. And before we start, if I can please ask the people out there to mute their phones so we make sure that there's no interference. And today it gives me truly a great pleasure to introduce Professor Stephen Smith from the Robotics Institute from Computer Science. He's a research professor, obtained his graduate degrees, MS and PhD, University of Pittsburgh, in computer science. He's been here for about 30 years. He's actually the director of the Integrated Coordination and Logistics Laboratory, and his research interests are in the areas of AI, constraint-based search, machine learning, multi-agent and multi-robot coordination. He's worked on various applications that include manufacturing, transportation, logistics, and e-business. One of the interesting things that he's also done recently is a project called Traffic 21, which I understand here at the city of Pittsburgh has received a lot of attention, which is sort of like a real-time scheduling of traffic based on, the flow of, cars and so forth. So it was implemented here in East Liberty. I believe it's still working, yeah. So it's received a lot of, good reviews. And it's basically the idea of using adaptive traffic and real-time scheduling. It's also, again, in terms of different areas, worked on practical planning and scheduling. So one of the things that we did when we had the last EWO meeting is because we're kind of very sort of more focused on math programming based, the idea was to see, what is really out there in terms of more approximate type of methods, but especially that could be implemented in real time. So he said, don't work on also coordinating, distribution, planning, and scheduling, algorithm and configuration of solvers, and in terms of the algorithmic side, especially on algorithmic, on evolutionary computation, in other words, genetic algorithms. Okay, so without further ado, Steve, welcome, and
thank you. Okay, let's see. As I move this, just will all go right.
Okay.
Right. So I'm going to move to the next slide. Apologize in advance. I have a little bit of animation on some of the slides, so those who have the PDF won't fully see it, but I think it'll become pretty clear. So, as Ignacio said, I head the Intelligent Coordination and Logistics Laboratory in the Robotics Institute. Really, the core focus of my research and the research of my group is what we call scalable execution-driven technologies for planning, scheduling, and coordination. We're really driven by a focus on solving complex application problems. Oops. Historically, we worked in manufacturing. I'm not sure what happened there. I'll get better at this.
Yeah.
But on the slide here, you see a couple of a set of projects that my lab is currently involved with, just to give you a sense of kind of what we do. So as Ignacio mentioned, one area we're working in is adaptive traffic signal control. I'm not going to say too much about that today. We're also building a same-day dynamic scheduler for access transportation systems, a paratransit organization that services Allegheny County here in Pittsburgh, working with a group with Boeing in sort of an automated manufacturing setting, the concept of moving parts to the assembly station and the manufacture of aircraft wings. We've worked a lot in transportation planning and logistics for the military, and I'll say a little bit more about that one. And we have some other work going as well. All of these applications, problems, the kinds of problems of interest to the lab are really instances, I think, of what I would call execution-driven planning and scheduling. And what I mean by that and what sort of drives the techniques that we build, we're looking at problems that are really organized around the principle of optimization in context. So you have a plan, a schedule. It's always in place. It's always executing. And you're continually integrating new demands, new information, new constraints, new results from back from the execution environment. They're coming from various sources. It may be interaction with the user that knows something that the system doesn't know. It may be other agents if I'm in a multi-actor kind of environment, or it may be from the execution system. It's a constantly running operation, where we're interleaving planning with execution and letting the results of execution drive the process. Along with that, another sort of aspect of these kinds of problems, I think, is there's typically a lot of uncertainty around. So you're constantly in this game of trying to refine your models of what the tasks are, what the constraints are, and if you can build up that model over time, you have another level of improvement in the problem solving. Some key attributes that drive what we might like to do then is decision making and pace with execution. First of all, that we want to keep pace with the chain of events that are moving along. An emphasis on incremental change and stability of solutions over time, particularly in the context where there are multiple actors. And then also looking ahead and developing plans that sort of proactively account for and hedge against uncertainty. So there's just sort of two complementary kinds of ways of looking and attacking the problem. And I'll say a little bit about the techniques that we've been, some of the techniques that we've developed to look at both of those things. So I shifted the order of two slides here. So the next slide I've just moved up is probably one of the highest visibility applications that our lab. We've been working for many years with the U.S. Transportation Command and the Air Mobility Command. And one problem that we've been tackling, have tackled for a while, is the problem of day-to-day allocation of aircraft and crews to airlift and tankers. This is the Transportation Command. They sort of the FedEx of the military, worldwide movement of cargo. It's a very large-scale problem. Typically, in the short term window of 2 or 3 weeks, there's thousands of missions, hundreds of assets. But it's also a typical example of this kind of continuous problem. There's a continuous dynamic stream of requirements coming in. As you allocate resources to missions, those decisions get communicated to executing agencies, units. And so there's this pragmatic necessity of trying to keep the solution stable. As the solution changes, if the solution changes, if the solution changes, people need to be notified. There's sort of a real cost to change. So that's not to say they're not interested in optimization. They're certainly interested in optimizing, but optimizing with that kind of perspective in mind. We've built a system which we call the AMC Allocator that is now actually part of their it's been part of their operational planning system for several years now. But we are currently working on a new generation system. But the core technology that drives this system and is what I'll talk about some today is this the kind of core technology that my group works on is incremental constraint-based search and optimization. So we really take a layered approach to optimization. We provide sort of capabilities to quickly integrate new requirements into the schedule and then layer on top of that techniques for producing better better solutions at the expense of disrupting some of the schedule and if as time permits. So I'll, as I go along, I'll use this example as a way, or this application as one example. Just to give you a little bit more of a sense of the problem, you have requests, input requests that consist of missions to deliver cargo. So a mission might pick up cargo at location A, deliver to B, then go to C. The decisions you need to make are sort of which air wing are going to fly which missions, so which aircraft and air crews are going to fly different missions, and what times to move them. That's sort of the basic problem. There are many constraints that need to be taken into account, the capacity, aircraft, air crew capacity at different locations, positioning, depositioning time, crew duty, crews can only fly for so long without resting, there are cargo pickup and drop-off windows, priority, and throughput constraints at various airports. The objective, I guess there are several potential objectives. The one that we formulate and sort of work with first is maximize the number of missions flown. This is typically always an oversubscribed problem, so you can't do everything. It's also a very disruptive problem. If the president wants to fly somewhere, that he typically moves with about 30 or 40 aircraft. So that sort of sends turmoil into the solution. So there's a lot of things. So maximize number of missions flown. If indeed, another objective that we'll look at by default is minimizing the total number of late days if we can't get everything done. But typically, typically, missions will get canceled or resubmitted and flown and scheduled later. So the outline of my talk then, with that kind of in mind, I'll spend the first half of the talk talking about incremental constraint-based search techniques. I'll look first at constraint-based solution generator, a simple infrastructure to generate solutions. Then we'll look at a couple techniques that we've employed to add optimizing capabilities on top of that. Then I'll spend the second part of the talk looking at the complementary perspective of, well, okay, suppose that I want to look proactively at the problem of generating schedules in advance that have some amount of resiliency to the turmoil of execution. And then I'll end up with just a couple words about what we're currently doing. So, as I mentioned, the core kind of search model that my group works with is a constraint-based search model. And really, there are kind of three components to this. On the slide here, in the middle, there's an active database, which it we'll think of as the current solution. It's active in the sense that as I make decisions, as I make new commitments into the solution, there's a constraint propagation process that infers consequences of those decisions and prunes away alternatives that may be. So I got then sort of two modules that for operating in this search space. On the one hand, on the left side here, I have commitment strategies or heuristics for moving forward in a search space. And then on the right, I have conflict handling strategies for situations when I reach an infeasible state. How do I either relax constraints or move backward out of that inconsistency and move forward again. There are several properties of constraint-based models that really lend themselves to execution-driven problems. One nice property is the modeling generality and expressiveness. My car is getting worked on. Particularly with respect to temporal constraints that sort of drive. There are very rich formalisms, simple temporal network models that allow expression of very complex sets of temporal constraints with a computational engine that allows inference very efficiently, polynomial time computation. So there's a very general capability with computational efficiency. Of course, modeling resource constraints is really the challenge or where the heart of the complexity comes from in the scheduling problem. We layer resource reasoning techniques on top of these temporal constraint infrastructure to get the power. Another property of constraint-based models is that they're inherently incremental. You sort of make decisions, infer consequences, and so forth. So they lend themselves very well to the kinds of processes you need in sort of keeping pace with execution and managing the solution change. And a third property, which I won't say too much about, but they're also highly compositional, so that from a system building point of view, they're very flexible and lead to very highly configurable kinds of systems. Moving to the next one. So let's suppose I have a solution in place. I have a schedule. Basic search process I can think of is one of adding a new task into an existing schedule, scheduling a new task. Here on the screen, I've shown sort of a simple search procedure here where I move through a process of looking at possible resources that could execute the task, and then possible intervals of time where I could feasibly allocate that resource to the task, and then sort of the outcome of that process is to pick a particular trajectory, and place the task on a particular slot on some resources timeline. In the context of the AMC problem that we were looking at earlier, I can add a little more detail and show you what kind of constraint filtering or propagation is going on at each step. So at the first, if I'm going to assign resources to a particular mission, I apply aircraft cargo compatibility constraints to filter possible air wings that could do it. And then I apply a host of other constraints to winnow down the set of feasible intervals that could possibly do it for any given air wing. And then I simply evaluate the options and select the best. Here the objective function is really to minimize non-productive flying time, and having done that, complete as early as possible. Now that's sort of a basic base configuration that assumes I can generate at least one option that satisfies all the constraints. But, as I was mentioning a moment ago, the core search procedure is also configurable to support generation of options when all constraints cannot be met. So by reconfiguring search operators and objective criteria, I can treat time windows as relaxable and minimize delay. I can relax capacity constraints and try to minimize the number of extra aircraft or crews I'm going to need. Or I can start to preempt lower priority tasks, and minimize disruption. So these kinds of tools in the AMC allocator are provided and used at the user as a user-driven process. I'll come back to this later. But I can also apply this to sets of decisions so that I can generate higher order options as well. So if I'm going to take that simple procedure I said and configure it into a scheduling search model, the next the next level of the event structure is just simply to couple that core procedure with a prioritization heuristic. That gives me a greedy solution generator. And the idea here is really I have a number of tasks to integrate into the schedule. I apply some heuristic that puts them in order, and then I run this search procedure for each one in turn, integrating them in. That gives me a candidate solution generator, and then I can start to think about, in the worst case, or in the simplest case, that gives me a way of taking a set of new missions and integrating them into the solution. But I can embed that in a larger optimizing search in a couple different ways. One way is I can run that procedure repeatedly and change the ordering heuristic. What I've said here, what we're going to look at is randomizing the heuristic. That's a technique that's worked well for us. Or I could also use this core procedure as a seed for some local search procedure. And I'll talk about a particular technique there. So let's move to sort of looking at two ideas for layering optimization on top of that, keeping in mind that we want to pay attention to disruptiveness. Well, the first idea that we've pursued, we've had success pursuing, is this idea of amplifying the performance of heuristics by using a stochastic search process. So here the starting idea is that we have a good heuristic, we have a good ordering heuristic, but its discriminatory power is going to vary from context to context. So if I think of a simple example, where let's suppose I have a prioritization scheme over my input tasks, two tasks that have the same priority are essentially equivalent as far as the ordering that ordering heuristic is going. So the issue is how do I balance adherence to a heuristic against the possibility of missing better solutions by doing a little more broader search. So the basic approach that we're taking here is to randomize the heuristic with the idea of essentially conducting a search in the neighborhood of the trajectory that the heuristic would give you through the search space. And then we can calibrate the degree of randomness to the level of uncertainty in a given decision context. So if my heuristic says these two choices are approximately the same, then maybe I want a higher potential random choice. Whereas if the heuristic says one choice is clearly better than the other, then I'd like to make that choice more deterministically. So that's the basic idea. So there are two approaches. There are two approaches that people have used to do this kind of randomization. So the basic idea is at each decision point we apply our heuristic to order the possible choices, and then we choose a branch in the search space randomly, but we bias it according to some function of this ordering. So an early idea that was proposed by John Brezina was to rank order the choices and then choose with probability related to the bias function that's given on the page there. We attempted to use this idea and it sort of came out with the conclusion that we were losing a lot of information by going to a rank ordering, and so proposed an alternative way of thinking about this using a value-based bias. Just use the heuristic value itself and then choose the branch. Again, same kind of notion, but using the value that the heuristic provides as the basis for bias. One side effect of switching from rank to value is that you actually avoid this order end process of ranking and can run much much faster. So here's just an example of some results that we've gotten using this idea. In this case, applying it to a single machine weighted tardiness problem. So here I have a search space, and I've got a number of jobs to sequence trying to minimize weighted tardiness in the presence of setups. And if you look at the search here, you can see each ply of the search, I'm just adding another job into the sequence. And then when I get to the, when I've made all my decisions, I'll have some ordering on that. So the basic heuristic used here is apparent tardiness costs with setups heuristic proposed by Lee and Pinedo. It's really sort of a perhaps probably the strongest heuristic or dispatch heuristic for this particular problem. And you can see, and here's a set of experiments over a number of different single machine problems where we've, I think, each consisting of 60 jobs, but varying the parameters so that the tightness of due dates and severity of setups was varied. But but you can see what we're showing here is the percentage improvement over the deterministic rule. So one thing you can see immediately looking at these numbers is you can oftentimes get a very significant boost in performance by searching around the heuristic, by taking advantage of the heuristic in this way. I guess the secondary point here is that the value-based ranking biasing does tend to dominate. One other, I don't have the results here, but one other point that we've also shown is that there's a significant cost performance advantage to applying this procedure as opposed to a systematic procedure like limited discrepancy search, which is actually designed to exploit heuristic. Limited discrepancy search is one that sort of systematically moves away from the heuristic progressively and moves all so that essentially you exhaust the search space. And we can show that the results show here that we can achieve results that outperform sort of the first two plies of that systematic process in orders of magnitude less time. Okay, so a second, let me move on to a second procedure called task swapping that is really aimed more at doing optimization, but doing optimization in context. Sort of the idea is controlled schedule revision to accommodate additional tasks without relaxing constraints. So again, we're solving an oversubscribed problem, what we'd like to do is try to, with some amount of shuffling of some amount of reallocation, to be able to integrate additional tasks into the schedule. So you know the motivation is fairly straightforward. I mean the incremental priority based scheduling approach, the core, obviously can result in fragmented resource usage and be suboptimal. On the other hand, if these requirements are coming in over time, reallocation is disruptive, so we'd like to be able to minimize it to the extent possible. So the basic approach is it's a pretty simple idea. You temporarily relax the priority constraint, and then you conduct a repair-based search around the footprint of an unassignable task feasible execution window. So you displace one or more tasks, try to get them back into the schedule, and if I can't get them all back in, if I can get them in, great, I've integrated without relaxing any constraints. If I can't, I just undo and leave the solution as it was. Here's a simple example, and I have to run the animation here. Probably without it, you won't see it. But here's this is taken from the AMC application, aircraft application. So I've got a particular resource, a wing, let's say, that's flying some number of missions. They're in brown, the tasks. I have an unassignable task that I'd like to integrate. So the process, first of all, compute the intervals where there actually is competition. There's we're over capacity. We're competing for the tasks. At that point, I select a particular task or a set of tasks to displace so that I can get the unassignable task in. In this case, I select task T2. I schedule my unassignable one. Now the unassignable task is out of the schedule. It expands to its feasible execution window, and now in this particular example, it works out very well. It gets reinserted, in this case, earlier in time. This is a very simple one, but I'm just trying to illustrate the process, and all is good. So one of the sort of keys to making this kind of process work is the selection of which task or tasks to retract from a solution. So we've done some experimentation with various retraction heuristics, and you can imagine one particular heuristic that was has worked well previously in repair based kind of searches. Is one called min conflicts, which where you simply count the intervals that are at capacity, the conflict with the test feasible window. The heuristic that we have had the most success with by far is one which we call max flexibility, which is just a simple ratio of the test duration to its feasible window size. So you can. Here's the general procedure. To kind of give you a sense, to insert an unassignable task, you identify where the conflicts with that task exist. You retract one or more tasks in that conflicted areas to free up capacity. You schedule the target task T and mark it as seen. You then reschedule the retracted tasks. If all retracted tasks cannot be rescheduled, you just simply recurse and reapply the process. You do this in a most constrained first fashion. If all tasks have been tested, in other words, marked as seen, and some remain unsignable, you backtrack to the original state. If you don't get to 6, then you'll have solved the problem. So we've had good results with this technique in the AMC domain, and here are just some experiments that we've performed using data sets that we've pulled from the actual domain. One of the more significant early results we got was that we were able to integrate. Maybe this says something about how bad their schedules were, too. Over 42% of the initially unassigned missions were successfully integrated into the solution. I don't have them here, but we can also have measured sort of stability also. And you get, if you have the assumption, that you're getting things back in without violating any constraints, then on one hand, you're preserving the ability to do all missions. But we have kind of tracked also the number of air wings that get retasked out of this process. Some more recent work has. We've sort of worked more on the algorithm, and with better pruning techniques have speeded this up by order of magnitude. We've also applied the stochastic sampling idea over the set of unassignables and gotten an additional 20% improvement that way. So we you know, sort of to go back again, sort of if I look at that particular application, I've got incremental procedures that allow me in real time to kind of integrate new demands as they come in into a schedule. If I get in a situation where things aren't getting in, or if I want to do some amount of controlled reoptimization, I'll invoke this task swapping routine. And then if I'm, you know, what happens occasionally, if there's a lull, they'll apply some more extended optimization as time presents and sort of look at the opportunities to do additional optimization at the potential of more disruption. And that's using the stochastic sampling approach. One thing, one recent piece of work that we've done just this past year is generalize this task swap procedure to operate with arbitrary task networks. I mean, the little example I gave you, the way the AMC problem is formulated, you really, since missions tend to be round trips, you can kind of treat them as single atomic tasks. But more generally, you'd like to be able to perform the same kind of search with arbitrary task networks. The networks of interest to us, we've been looking in the paratransit scheduling at pickup and delivery problems where your vehicle has a capacity and you can interleave pickups and drop-offs and carry multiple people at once. So the application has been to dynamic dollar ride problems, and we've actually gotten some very nice results with this generalization. We first of all applied it to a series of benchmark problems that others had studied with systematic search techniques. And we can, in particular, we looked at a constraint programming approach and a taboo search approach that really kind of represent the kind of state of the art on these particular benchmark set. And we're able to essentially demonstrate that with our approximate technique, we're essentially getting the same level of performance. Level of solving performance that ending up on these benchmarks with the same number of infeasible instances. These are formulated as constraint satisfaction problems. So it's you know, again, it's an oversubscription kind of problem. We've also applied the same technique to schedules that are developed by the current scheduler used by Access Transportation Systems, and you know, conservatively speaking, we're able to get a 50% greater than 50%, actually more than that, in unscheduled requests over the baseline scheduler. Now, what this means in practice, since all requests get serviced, is that there's less delays, less late pickups than before. If you can do the right allocation of vehicles to riders, customers. Let's see. Okay, let me spend about the last 10 minutes or so changing gears and talking a little bit about computing resilient schedules. This is a sort of complementary perspective of the building schedules that retain some amount of flexibility and can absorb some amount of unpredictability and execution. You know, it may be as simple as managing task execution windows instead of precise times, keeping resource options rather than precise assignments, adding redundancy to the solution to increase the likelihood of success. The technique I'm going to talk about first is one that we've developed over the past several years, which we refer to as partial order scheduling procedures. It starts with the idea of building a schedule as a disjunctive graph, sequencing activities that are competing for the same resources and letting the start and end times float. So, for example, in the AMC application, the techniques we were using were what we would think of as a fixed time solution. We committed to particular start times for the missions, and in fact, that's partly a consequence of the domain. But you could also think of, instead of fixing things in time, of simply just sequencing things that are competing for the same resource. And the diagram here is just illustrating the kind of flexibility and execution windows now that results as I'm thinking of that. So to think about building schedules that are temporally flexible, you need some kind of notion of what that might mean. We've worked with a couple different measures. One, a measure we call fluidity, which is a measure of the average slack in the schedule, the distance between start and end points of tasks minus the durations. And then another measure, which we call flexibility, which is really the degree of orderedness, how large the chains of dependencies are in the schedule. The longer the dependency, the longer the potential ripple as if a particular activity gets delayed. So keeping those in mind, here's the basic solving procedure that we use. We compute, which can be done efficiently. We compute a time-feasible task network, and then we impose capacity constraints. Now we can notice the areas where we're over capacity. We go through a resource leveling step where we just simply pick two activities, in the simplest case, two activities that are competing for the same resource. We order them, we do a constraint propagation, and then the cycle continues. So we keep doing that. It's the basic problem-solving procedure then is to do that until you've reduced all peaks under capacity. We got a somewhat counterintuitive result in building robust schedule. You can think of two different ways of building a schedule that remains temporally flexible. One kind of way, which I've called here the envelope-based commitment, a previous technique that had been developed, is really what you might think of as the least commitment approach. You keep posting constraints, sequencing things, and you sort of shrink the search space or the space of feasible solutions as you go until you have convinced yourself that you're under capacity, and now you have a set of solutions you can think of, a set of possible executions. Another approach is simply to compute a single point solution, a fixed point solution, and then once having done that, stretch that solution out as the problem constraints will allow you. Somewhat counterintuitively, that second technique actually we've found works very well. It's a significant computational trade-off. We can compute solutions in order of magnitude faster time, generally with pretty strong robustness figures. So the idea is really it's a two-step process. First, you generate a fixed-time solution using the earliest start time profile. It's a single point solution. Instead of speculating about possible conflicts, you can see directly what the conflicts are. Once you've built that solution, then you transform it into a partial order solution through a process called chaining. The idea of chaining is really of allocating. So what I've done is dropped the fixed times, and now I start allocating tasks to particular subunits of capacity, and I end up with set of chains. I can drop the constraints that aren't necessary, and I have a partial order solution. There are a couple of nice theoretical properties about this. One is that this chaining step is make span preserving, tardiness preserving. So I could think of generating that point solution as an optimization step, and then I can think of the chaining step as a step to sort of turn that optimization into a more flexible solution. So that's nice. A second nice property is that there's no loss in generality from focusing on partial order schedules that are in this chaining form, you know, this where that you have chains allocated to each sub activity. So in essence, the total space of partial order schedules is still reachable. So that brings up the idea. I mean, different chaining form partial order schedules can be better or can be more or less robust. Here's the two examples, and you know, intuitively, the one on the right has less linkage and is more more resilient. So the idea comes up that, well, I could search in the space of chaining form solutions and try to optimize with respect to some robustness metric. And in fact, that's the kind of result that we've gotten using much the same kind of stochastic sampling as a way of exploring the space, but using one of the robustness metric as a way of incorporating or as the objective criteria. So you can also make the search more effective by employing heuristics, and these can be randomized in the same way. But here's one sort of heuristic is to avoid synchronization points. So if I'm allocating activities to chains, pick the ones that give me the least amount of linkage. So here I need 2 units of capacity. Okay, if I put it there, that's the obvious point. It minimizes the number of linkage, the amount of linkage. Here's a dependency that's from a problem constraint. A second heuristic is just to allocate synergistically with those. So in that case there, what I really should have done is allocated that second one down to the third one. Now I've, again, minimized the number of arcs. And I'm done. So we've gotten some very nice results, mainly looking at the resource-constrained project scheduling problem benchmarks with this idea. And we've done some application of this to larger-scale applications. Stop. I got a couple more minutes here. Then
maybe 2 minutes.
Okay. I won't really go through this last part in detail. But one other area that we've worked on is this issue of, if I have information about knowledge about the uncertainty in the environment, how do I take advantage of it in a reasonable, scalable way? And here's the trade-off is the following, that reasoning with explicit models of uncertainty enables you to compute expected optimal solutions, which is a great thing, but these techniques do not scale very well. On the other hand, deterministic scheduling procedures are much more scalable, but in the case of partial order schedules, if I look at the associated what are called controllability models that cope with that are models that take advantage of uncertainty, they are very conservative. And in fact, you can imagine, you can see intuitively that they are conservative, because if your hedge against uncertainty is just temporal flexibility, you're really working with the endpoints. You're not really working with any points in between. And so your ability to to manage uncertainty is fairly conservative, worst case. So our basic approach, the basic approach we've explored is one of constructing a partial order schedule based on deterministic assumptions, which we can do efficiently, and then using an explicit analysis of uncertainty to identify weak points in the schedule and take strengthening actions. So I'll just leave it to not go through this example, but leave it at that and show you just, it's not easy to get through this example, but just show you a few results that we've actually gotten some very interesting results. Here, what we're looking at is a simulated schedule execution under two starting conditions. One, an initial deterministic schedule that was generated, and two, one that's strengthened by essentially adding redundancy in the schedule to increase the expected quality, the expected payoff of the solution. And you can see in this set of experiments that on average we were able to these were sort of benchmarks pulled from a third party. This was a research program that we were involved with in collaborative planning. But we were able to strengthen the schedules on average 36%, or the simulated execution. Improve that by 36% over the others, over the initial deterministic. So let me just summarize, and then I'll conclude. I guess the point of the talk, the point of the work that we've been building towards this, our focus on execution-driven planning, is that scheduling in dynamic and uncertain environments really requires a balance of proactive and reactive decision making. In multi-actor settings, particularly. There's a need for incremental change and solution stability, and that has implications for how you want to approach the optimization problem. Proactive consideration of uncertainty can reduce the burden of execution time schedule management. So these are really sort of two complementary sets of techniques that by no means people have put together, but ultimately what happens. I guess what we think our results have shown is that the constraint-based planning and scheduling models support both of these complementary perspectives.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. We're a little bit short of time because we have another seminar, but we can take a couple of questions. Anybody has a question here or out there in the audience? Anybody would like to ask a question to Steve Smith? Usually a little shy. Let me ask a question. The techniques that you presented seem to resemble, at least in principles, of the ideas of constraint programming. Yeah. And then you also presented some results of versus constraint programming. So two questions. Is your technique conceptually different than constraint programming? What are the differences, or is it more a difference of the use of heuristics and how you do it?
I think mostly it's well, there are differences on two levels. One is that I think a lot of our work has focused on finding good heuristics and ways of exploiting good heuristics that fit pretty synergistically with constraint programming ideas. In point of fact, we don't use a commercial off-the-shelf solver, but take components and have essentially a system that we configure.
So you write your own.
Yeah, system. Right.
What computer language are you using?
We use a variety, but a lot of the core work, the AMC scheduler, for example, is in Common Lisp.
Common Lisp.
Good AI
stuff.
That's right. That's right.
Right. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah.
For the swap of tasks, you mentioned that the rescheduling of each task has high cost. But I guess there is a difference between rescheduling a little bit or a lot.
That's true.
Kind of optimization being embedded in this swapping algorithm.
Yeah, that's true. I think you could always, we've thought about that a little bit and biasing towards movement in time, but staying with the same resource versus retasking to another resource. You know, the former being a little less disruptive than the other, but it's an interesting question. It's certainly the case. I don't think anyone has really done a great job of sort of, modeling those distinctions, I guess. But it's an interesting
thing. And maybe one more, if I can ask. Since our group is sort of more math programming oriented, have you used at any point also sort of mixed integer programming or those?
I'm trying to think of one. We did some work where we were trying to look at a problem where you sort of optimize the duration of tasks. And one subproblem turned out to be a time-cost trade-off, which we could solve very... So we're very much interested in hybrid kind of techniques, and we've used them quite a bit.
Okay, well, maybe on that note, again, let me thank very much Steve Smith for a very interesting talk that he gave. Thank you, Steve.
Sure.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we almost have to run.
No, I know. I understand.
So everybody has to go.